This morning we studied the brevity of life, and I was talking with one of the parents of one of our graduates, and I was saying, I'm sure that your child felt like the school, you know, time here went by in a hurry. And they said, no, they just finished with finals. This last week seemed to be an eternity. And I understand sometimes as you go through immediate crises that time seems to stand still. But the truth is, those that are graduating, didn't seem like just yesterday, did it, that you first came here and you began. And it seems like it goes by in an instant, and it does. What comes next? That's interesting. You don't always know. You'll get in the business world. You may get in some relationships there that may be good and may be bad. One of the interesting things, before I went into full-time preaching, I worked in a lot of jobs and learned a lot about management styles and the kind of people you work with. You've got a lot of choices you make when you take on a job, and sometimes you end up with a oversight or a management that's not good. You're going to choose one day to marry. I hope you'll choose wisely. I hope you'll put God first and want somebody else that put God first, because you could end up in a marriage that is difficult. I want to talk with you tonight about a godly woman by the name of Abigail. One who, for whatever reason, of course, back in those days, there wasn't a dating system. The parents chose the mates. But she ended up in a marriage, sadly, to a man that really was a fool. And even his name indicated that, Nabal. And I want to look at that even in light of today. I certainly don't follow human days that are set aside for various things. You know, today is Mother's Day. There's no biblical basis of a Mother's Day, but I think it's a good thing for the world to want to recognize mothers, because what a valuable, valuable, critical element in the work of the Lord in the development of the home. And I want to show you the example of a godly woman, and that would be an example to us. What does it mean to serve God? Serving God is not a mere intellectual acceptance that God exists. Serving God is a commitment of our whole heart, being, and soul. It is a commitment to a path of life that is really described as spirituality. On the other hand, there's worldliness. Satan owns the world. Most people that you will meet, 99.9% of the people you will meet in terms of just broadly in this world, you know, they're going to be in worldliness. Their decision-making process is based upon three things. Here is 1 John 2:15 telling us about it. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And as we talked about this morning, the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. How do you make decisions? Start your day loving God, thinking about how you can serve Him, doors of opportunity. Or do you start your day, what do I feel like doing? How can I accomplish things that accomplish worldly goals? You see, the worldly mind has no concept of future consequences. The worldly mind doesn't even understand peace. The worldly person really doesn't understand who they are and where they're going. John 14:26, Jesus talked about a peace that the world will never understand. Jesus says, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you, not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. God at times will put us through things that the world will say, get out of it. Don't stay in that situation. That's not fair. Leave it. You're not getting your just due. Go do something else. Hit them back. Not serving God do you do that. Our peace comes not upon the circumstances that surround us and the things that happen in this life, but our relationship to God. And as a result, we'll go through some things that the world thinks we're crazy to do. John 16:32, Jesus says, indeed, the hour is coming, yes, and has now come, that you will be scattered, each to his own, and will leave me alone. Yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me. These things I have spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you'll have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. Jesus, in going to the cross, was saying, I'm doing this for you. The love of God, spirituality, will lead you down difficult paths. You'll seem to be forsaken and isolated. The world will say, what you're doing is crazy. But Jesus says you'll find peace and you'll find eternal life. I will tell you, in this life, life is not fair. There will be things that happen to you that aren't right, and you're not going to have them fixed in this life. God hasn't forsaken you when that happens. When you understand, as we talked about this morning, the brevity of life, things that last, and you understand the end of things, then you set your mind on being like God, not the world around you. Romans 8:5, for those who live according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh, but those who live according to the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. I like how it's put in Romans 8:13, but if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body, you will live, and you'll be tested. I don't know of any greater test for our spirituality than relationships. The marriage relationship, the job relationship, family relationships, in-laws and outlaws. You know, there are a lot of ways you're going to be tested. You're a Christian, you're serving God, you'll put Him first, you'll forgive others. Okay, let's be put to the test and let's find out what you really are. We're going to read about a great woman. A woman that can be described as a daughter of Sarah. The Bible talks about wives being submissive to your own husbands in 1 Peter 3:1. It says, wives likewise be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives. Now let me tell you what we're seeing here. A Christian married to a non-Christian. You should not willingly enter into that relationship. Well, you may say, Larry, it's scriptural for a Christian to be married to a non-Christian. I understand that relationship is acceptable. And 1 Peter 3 doesn't exactly tell us how they ended up in that relationship. I would rather suspect that she was converted and the husband was not converted. But that's going to be testing and that's going to be hard to you. And you're going to try to reach them, but guess what? And it's true in the family relationship, sometimes you can't tell your mate what to do. You got to live it. And it won't be easy. And a lot of times they may say you do right and they still don't do right. Here the hope is they may choose to become a Christian. Verse 2, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear, when they see your heart, verse 3, do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on the fine apparel. But rather let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. Relationships will test you. And the daughters of Sarah are described later in verse 6 as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are, if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. Wait a minute, we're talking about a marriage relationship. Afraid with terror? Yes, sir. You're submitting yourself to your husband. And he's making choices and he's making plans. In this case, he's not a Christian. And you find yourself in a frightening situation. Worldliness says if the husband don't listen to you, leave him. Worldliness says that you need to, if things are difficult, find something else. But spirituality tells us trust in God. Now let's talk about Abigail and her husband by the name of Nabal. Nabal was a rich man. And you know, sometimes people marry on the basis of money. As I suggested earlier, Abigail didn't make a choice to enter this marriage. There's no evidence of that. But sometimes you may think, I want to marry somebody who can provide for me materially. That's not your needs. Yes, you want somebody who will work, and you want somebody who has initiative. You want somebody who fears God and will provide for his family with his hands. You want that because that's the nature of spirituality. But if you want to marry because of money, I want you to look at Nabal. I don't know how he became rich, but he was rich. In 1 Samuel 25 and verse 2, it says, "Now there was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel, and the man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. And the name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife Abigail. And she was a woman of good understanding and beautiful appearance, but the man was harsh and evil in his doings. And he was of the house of Caleb." What a contrast. Have you ever seen marriages like that? I'm afraid I have. For there would be the woman who was spiritual and the woman who cared for the Lord and tried to serve the Lord and be meek, and man be a fool. I remember one situation years ago in the Birmingham area. There was a woman, her husband forbade her to teach her children the Bible. There was another man, I remember once, he would come to services, but people would warn me, if he didn't like something you like, he might challenge you to a fight in the church building or after services. And I remember one time he nearly did it. Quick-tempered, harsh. I mean, sometimes I've seen people in situations that are terrible. Now, let me tell you something. Marriage can be rough. But you can serve God and make this thing work. Let me show you how Abigail did it. I don't know how Nabal became a success. But I believe in life one of the worst things that can happen to us sometimes is that we become rich. That somehow things work, we have no more struggle. As I suggested earlier this morning, that sometimes the brevity of life challenges us. Sometimes just the difficulty of being able to just to earn a living is humbling, and that's good for us. I think one of the worst things that could have ever happened to me is for me to somehow get some huge inheritance where I wouldn't have to struggle anymore. I think my struggles helped me spiritually. The Bible warns us in 1 Timothy 6:10, it says, "For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some, having strayed from the faith in their greediness, pierced themselves through with many sorrows." Do you think having ease is going to give you the peace of God? No, 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 no. Many times it's the hurts in this world that turns you to God and find His peace. It's not going to come through money. Nabal was a blind man. And I'll tell you, you don't know how somebody really is spiritually. You want to know the condition of one's heart, listen to them. Nabal was a man that he spoke in certain ways. Let's look at 1 Samuel 25. Before we get to 1 Samuel 25, and we're going to look at some verses earlier and later on the lesson about this, David at this time was being pursued by King Saul. Now, could you imagine David being in your neighborhood at this time? David had his 39 mighty men with him, and he had a company of about 400 men. Now, I want to tell you, that's like a small army in your neighborhood. A small army who God was with. A small army whose mighty men, one of the mighty men, in different occasions took on Philistines and a whole garrison and sent their army fleeing. But David was humbled by this. He had the king of Israel and the army of Israel going against him. He had to move from place to place, hiding from Saul. Now, what had happened, Nabal, he had all of these flocks and all of these sheep, and his shepherds had come into David's territory. You know what David did? He protected them. Didn't take anything from them. One of the things about having this many flocks is that somebody may come and steal it, or some of the sheep may become lost. David, who he could have taken what he wanted, protected them, didn't do anything bad. As a matter of fact, he provided a service for them. Now David, because he's fleeing, because he's running from place to place, later asked Nabal for some food. Notice Nabal's response. David sent 10 young men, and David said to the young men, "Go up to Carmel, go to Nabal, and greet him in my name." Now, one of the things David knows is David knows that Nabal knows who he is. Everybody in Israel knows who David is. And certainly because he was caring about his business interests, he's already known what happened. He knew this. But now notice what Nabal tries to do. He wants to save a little money. Verse 6, "And thus you say to him who lives in prosperity, 'Peace be to you, peace to your house and peace to all that you have. Now I've heard that you have had cheerers, your shepherds were with us, and we did not hurt them, nor was there anything missing from them all the while they were in Carmel. Ask your young men and they will tell you. Therefore let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on a feast day. Please give whatever comes to your hand and to your servants and to your son David. Now listen, King David, David's not actually a king yet. He's already been anointed a king. He's going to become king. David comes to Nabal and says, I'm your son. Humbly, kindly, Nabal could find out what David's men had done for him. Now here's Nabal's thinking. Now what's Nabal's bottom line? Is he interested in people? Is he interested in righteousness? Is he even got a brain in his head to understand the dangerous situation he's in if he offends David? Not Nabal. Nabal's going to think about money. I'm going to save some money. So here's what happens. In verse 9 it says, so when David's young men came, they spoke to Nabal according to all these words in the name of David and waited. Then Nabal answered David's servants and said, who is David? And who's the son of Jesse? I've never heard of this guy before. Who is he? There are many servants nowadays who break away each one from his master. Yeah, this some runaway slave. I just can't go giving my money to every deadbeat. Shall I take then my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shearers and give it to men when I do not know where they are from? So David's young men turned on their heels and went back, and they came and told him all these words. Could I just speak just from even a worldly standpoint? Nabal, that's stupid. You're crazy. If David was a worldly man, you're dead. If he's a spiritual man and gives in to temptation, you're dead. You're playing with fire and you're too stupid to know the difference. I know that's harsh, but that's where Nabal's at here. This was incredibly foolish. He's going to save a few dollars. Well, what happens here is that David decides to go kill Nabal. And we'll look at that in a moment. But now let's bring Abigail into the situation. Imagine this. You're married to Nabal. You have children by Nabal. This household is one of the things you've probably helped build up. And probably a lot of Nabal's success likely was attributed to Abigail. I would think, I will tell you, she was the wise person. He was the kind of the crazy person. And she hears what's happening. David's coming. Now, one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, look, David sent messengers from the wilderness to greet our master, and he reviled them. But the men were very good to us, and we're not hurt, nor did we miss anything as long as we accompanied them when we were in the fields. They were a wall to us by night and day, all the time that we were with them keeping the sheep. Now, therefore, no one consider what you do, for harm is determined against our master and against his household. For he is such a scoundrel that no one can speak to him. Have you ever known a fool? I have. I have in times past made a fool my friend. Fools, for their lack of wisdom, do have some ability. They have some ability to charm you. They have some ability at times to get you interested in some things. They at times, when they feel like it, when it serves their interest, to make you feel good. But the bottom line with a fool is not interested in hearing. Ever been around somebody you couldn't talk to? And that's the very point that's made here. The word Nabal literally means fool or rude or ill-bred. In the Bible warns us, don't be a fool. In Proverbs 1 and verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. You know, there have been times in my life I've gotten mad. Spiritually, I've gotten mad. Heard a sermon, gotten mad. I remember one preacher once, I got mad at him. I thought he was the rudest thing there was, and he was arrogant. And I tried to teach him because I thought he was wrong about the position he held, and he taught me. You see, a fool, though, will get mad and they don't want to hear you. And matter of fact, the more you try to talk to them, the more they're going to try to hurt you. Shut up is what they'll tell you. Let's not be fools. We can be angry and have a righteous anger and pursue righteousness, and we can learn. Proverbs 12:15, it says, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise. You know what a fool's interested in? They're here now to have happiness. They want to get what they want now. And don't you get in the way of a fool and his folly, the Bible tells us. Proverbs 23:9, it says, do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of your words. You need in life, by the way, to be able to discern when you're in the presence of a fool. You know how you know if you're in the presence of a fool? Their words. Nabal demonstrated who he was. And so, sometimes we don't want to call somebody a fool. They're just stubborn. Or we won't call them a fool. They just like to have fun. Well, being stubborn is one thing and having fun is another. But there's such a thing as a fool, and the fool will not listen. Another problem Nabal had, he was a drunkard. You see, fools are not interested in wisdom. You can give me all that preacher talk about drinking and drugs. You can give me all that preacher talk, but I will tell you, it's not going to affect me. That's what the fool says. Wisdom doesn't apply to me. And so we read about during this time of crisis where Nabal is about to be killed, doesn't even see it coming. Now Abigail went to Nabal, and there he was holding a feast in his house like the feast of a king. And Nabal's heart was very merry within him, for he was very drunk. Therefore, she told him nothing, little or much, until morning light. You know, a fool doesn't consider the issues of life. Let's have fun. Let's get stoned. They'll be happy when they're drunk, but they don't want to deal with issues that are difficult themselves, changes they need to make, mistakes they've made. They don't want to hear about it. Drunkenness and alcohol is a terrible, terrible thing. The Bible talks about alcohol, is the lack of judgment and the fruits of it. Proverbs 4:17 says, where they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. There's a figurative use here, but the idea is that alcohol is associated with evil. Proverbs 21 more specifically says, wine is a mocker, strong drink is a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise. And of course, Nabal was not wise. I knew fools when I was in college. Some attended here years ago. I can remember years ago, back in the 70s, that long time ago, that I knew there was an element of college students. And I remember one particular girl that really thought that it didn't matter if she slept with her boyfriend. It didn't matter if she went out and got drunk. And there was almost a subculture. And this tends to happen when you have a group of any size. There are always those that kind of think, the rules don't apply to me. It's not going to affect me. I can go down these paths. In this case, this girl sobered up, literally, because she ended up getting pregnant and she had an abortion. And she finally learned the path that she was going down was destructive, and she was yanked out of that through a terrible ordeal. But she ceased being a fool. You need to understand that there are consequences to things that you do. Now let's talk about Abigail. Abigail's married to a drunken fool who doesn't know how to speak well to anybody unless he's drunk. Should Abigail have left Nabal? Nope. You know why? God did not give Abigail that authority to do that. Abigail was a spiritual woman. And let's talk about that if we could. And let's talk about David. Did you know that David went down the path of a fool in this account? He was not a fool because he was teachable. And he initially got motivated by his anger and not a righteous anger, was going to do something that he shouldn't have done. We've already talked about how, David approached him very humbly at first. David had a good attitude. He didn't take advantage of Nabal's shearers. When he came to Nabal through his messengers, he was very humble. That's good. But then what happens? He hears the rebuke of Nabal. Nabal lied. Who's David? Who's son of Jesse? You runaway slave. I don't want to give my money to beggars and the deadbeats. Could you imagine David hearing that? He got angry. Not a righteous anger. Let's read about it. 1 Samuel 25:13. Got to watch that anger. Anger will tell you. Okay, here's his anger hitting him quickly. Then David said to his men, every man gird on his sword. So every man girded on his sword, and David also girded on his sword, and about 400 men went with David, and 200 stayed with supplies. Okay, Nabal, you want to call me a runaway slave? Let me show you what these runaway slaves can do. Verse 21, he starts thinking about it. I took care of this guy, I gave him good, and now he not only refuses to help me, but he insults me. Ever been insulted? Ever had somebody speak of your character? Have you ever had somebody do you dirty and you've done nothing but good to them? Doesn't it make you angry? Be careful. Now, David had said, surely in vain I have protected all this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him. Now, notice what David said. That's in vain. David, it is never vain to do right. If you do good to an evil person, it's not in vain. Keep reading. And he has repaid me evil for good. May God do so and more also to the enemies of David if I leave one male of all who belong to him by morning light. What's David going to do? He's going to go in on his household and his slaves and his children and kill every male. What's wrong with that? Is God behind it? No. Does David feel like God's behind it? Yeah, he's calling God to witness. Anger when it's not under control will make you crazy. Now Abigail comes. And Abigail gets David to see some things. It says, when Abigail saw David, she hastened him out from her donkey, fell face before David and bowed down to the ground. We'll read more about Abigail in a moment. We've already talked about Nabal and what he said and the foolish response. Let's go back one more time with Nabal. There have been times where good people speak to me unwisely. And I'll have to tell you, I don't always have control of my spirit. I don't want to speak out foolishly. But there are times a person can say and do something, it's like somebody hitting me in the face. I'll never forget a few times driving where I got mad at somebody. And I did things I wished I hadn't done. And I'm sitting there thinking, it was just instant, boom, you know, you just respond to it. And I'm thinking, here I am preaching on anger and preach from that for the pulpit. People could see me out in real life sometimes. I make a fool of myself with my quick anger. How can you prevent others from having quick anger in your marriage, in your relationships, in the church? Proverbs 15:1. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fools pours forth foolishness. Brethren, we've got to be willing to take our tongues and bite them and not let ourselves respond to a harsh word. It is hard to do that. This is a hard thing to do. You see, David didn't follow the wisdom of God here. What do you do when you're angry? What do you do when you're hurt? And boy, it gives you energy, doesn't it? It's like putting adrenaline in your body, and you've got to release that somehow. Slow it down. James 1:19. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. For the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. And so again, we may not be like David with an army with a sword to go kill somebody, but you know what we have a problem in the church sometimes? The swords of our tongues. Ooh, and they can do a lot more damage sometimes than the physical sword. Now let's talk about Abigail. What do you do if you're Abigail? You have a husband who is a fool. You have a husband who has now gotten David, who was a righteous man, enraged. And by the way, if you'll notice, when Abigail responds to David, she knew a lot about David's background. And she knew a lot about David's reputation. She's wise. What does she do? Could she have said, it's not my fault? I'm not responsible for this, and could have got angry at Nabal and gone and chewed him out. No, that's not what she does. She's got an immediate crisis in hand. And Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 sheep already dressed, 5 seeth of roasted grain, 100 clusters of raisin, 200 cakes of figs, and loaded them on donkeys. And she said to her servants, go on before me, see, I'm coming after you. But she did not tell her husband, Nabal. So it was, she rode on the donkey, she went under the cover of the hill, and there was David, his men, coming down toward her, and she met them. Here they are, buddy, with their swords on, and they're not got a lot of smiles. She's bold, she's brave, she's courageous, she's putting her life in her hands. You know, if we could only have the wisdom of God and restrain our anger, there's so many good things that we could do. You know one of the greatest things you can do to those who treat you harshly? You know Romans 12, we're going to get there before the sermon's over with. Do them good. You know the best thing you can do when somebody takes from you and speaks evil of you and hurts you is to bless them. Oh, that's hard to do. Here, first thing Abigail does, she gives these goods to David. She provides gifts to David. Notice the wisdom that comes from above. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, wanting to get everything you want. No, that's not what it says. Willing to yield. Full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. You see, the Christian can give up, the spiritual person can give up things. You've heard my reputation through gossip. I can give up my reputation. There's nothing that the child of Satan can do to me that I can't lose and give that up as far as the things they can take from me. They can't take my soul. They can't take my spirit. They cannot take the wisdom that is from above that is within me. Verse 18 says, now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. This took great humility. And notice the humility of her. We've already read verse 25, but again, notice she fell on her face before David and bowed to the ground. Now, you know, falling on your face, literally, you just put your face on the ground. And she bows before David. And so she fell at his feet and said, oh, me, my Lord, let this iniquity be. And please let your maidservant speak in your ears and hear the words of your maidservant. You know what an angry spiritual man would do when they see a woman like this? She's bowing down to me, bowing down to me. And she's asking for forgiveness of me. I mean, a spiritual person will look at this and say, whoa, wait just a minute, I must be putting myself in the place of God. It would make me think that, wait, am I judge, jury, and executioner here? Wait just a minute. Verse 25, please let not my Lord regard this scoundrel Nabal. For as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, your maidservant, did not see the young man of my Lord whom you sent. You see, here she's very willing to take on the blows herself. She's not just somehow making a mock confession. This is a great humility that she's showing. Now notice what else she does. David knows the Lord. Abigail knows the Lord. You know, we can get mad at each other. We can get angry at each other, but if we know the Lord, guess what? We can get that anger out of the way and we can get down to the things we need to do. And we talk about God. Notice what she does. Notice how she preaches to David here. This is humble. This was very in great humility. As we said, a daughter of Sarah. But she says, now therefore, my Lord, as the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, since the Lord has held you back from coming to bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hand, now then let your enemies and those who seek my harm be as my Lord Nabal. And now this present, which your maidservant has brought to my Lord, let it be given to the young men who follow my Lord. Please forgive the trespass of your maidservant. For the Lord will certainly make for my Lord an enduring house. Because my Lord fights the battle of the Lord. And evil is not found in you throughout your days. Notice her appealing to you. You know God's taking care of you. How could you have escaped Saul? How could you be in the place that you are right now if you hadn't been humbled and let God fight your battles? You're interested in righteousness. You couldn't have a relationship with the Lord. And notice the implication here. Say, David, you are about to destroy that. She didn't rebuke him, but she says, if you love the Lord and you love righteousness, God will be with you. Speaks of Saul in verse 29. Yet a man has risen to pursue you and seek your life, but the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living with the Lord your God. And the lives of your enemies shall he sling out as from the pocket of a sling. Hey, David, how have you been successful so far? God's fought the battles. Not you. I know you have mighty men. I know you have these numbers of men, but you still are going against thousands. Verse 30. It shall come to pass that when the Lord has done for my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you and has appointed you ruler over Israel, that this will be no grief to you. Ever gotten angry? Acted on that anger? Said things you shouldn't have said, done things you shouldn't have done? Yes, we've all done that. And then you give it a little time and you look back and how do you feel about that? And she says, now, you know, you need to see the long picture, David. You're going to be appointed king, and one day you're going to be king, and you're going to look back at this, and, you know, you're going to be thankful. Wow. I'm glad I didn't do that. He says, this will be of no grief to you, nor offense of heart to my Lord, either that you have shed blood without cause, or that my Lord has avenged himself. But when the Lord has dealt well with my Lord, then remember your maidservant. Wow. I hope every one of you will marry someone like that. I hope that before marriage you'll have friends that will help you in that way. Brethren, there will be times in this life we will be angry with somebody and we won't let that person change our minds with our irrational anger. I hope that we'll have somebody that's spiritual around us that will say, your attitude's not right, and challenge us. You know we're going to Romans 12, and we're there now. Look at Romans 12. The Bible says, beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Do you trust in God? David could avenge himself, and he could do it easily here. And Abigail pointed out to him, you don't want to be the one to have taken vengeance. Old and New Testament, vengeance is the Lord's. Whoa. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you'll heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. That is hard. I don't preach to you this evening as a person that's got all that down. But in my experience, this will be the acid test for your Christianity. There are a lot of things that may happen in this life, but the toughest things that happen in this life is when in relationships somebody hurts us or disappoints us and how we respond. 1 Peter 2:23, we're following Jesus' example. Who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judgeth righteously. Christian, can you let it go? Can you take the past disappointments and hurts, and you want to see somebody have vengeance put upon them? Can you let your personal desire for vengeance go? If you can't, you don't trust God. Can you think about that? That's what Jesus was unjustly treated, but he did not hit back because he trusted God. And David, I tell you what, David was teachable. You know, with righteous people, if you can get their anger calmed down and their brain working, they'll see what's right. 1 Samuel 25:34, for indeed as the Lord of God Israel lives, who has kept me back from hurting you. Notice what, it was Abigail that spoke to him, but he recognized that's the Lord working through Abigail. Unless you had hastened and come to meet me, surely by morning light no males would have been left in Nabal. So David received her hand, what she had brought him, and said to her, go up in peace in your house. See, I have heeded your voice and respected your person. Nabal, Abigail couldn't talk to Nabal. But David listened to her. And what finally happens is that there's an end here. What ends up happening is that we're going to see Abigail rewarded. You know the verses, Psalms 27:14, wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he said, and he shall strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Psalms 37:7, rest in the Lord, wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass. Cease from anger, forsake wrath. Do not fret, it only causes harm, for evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait on the Lord shall inherit the earth. God's going to take care of the evildoers. Christian, we don't have to be judge, jury, and executioner. Aren't we glad of that? Why is it hard to wait? Because you got to believe in an unseen God. End of Nabal. Nabal, sobering up from his drunken feast, he finally hears that, you know what? You were this close, Nabal, to being killed by David. He had those mighty men. He had those armies. 1 Samuel 25:37, so it was in the morning when the wine had gone from Nabal and his wife had told him these things that his heart died within him and he became like a stone. And what ends up is that Abigail's faith caused David to want to marry Abigail. And the Bible indicates that Abigail accepted that. And notice when she accepted David's invitation to be his wife. And by the way, Abigail knew that David one day would be king. Now you say, the king wants you to marry him. Oh yeah, I'll marry the king. And guess what, buddy? I'll have people serve me. I'll one day be in the palace. And I'll have everything I want to eat. And my children are going to have the best education. And I'm going to have a life of ease. Not a spiritual person. A spiritual person hates inactivity. Notice what she said she was going to do by becoming his wife. Then she arose, bowed her face to the earth, and said, here is your maidservant, a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord. Mother's Day. What's a great mother? One who serves. One who takes the foolishness of husbands and children and loves God. And so we see the value of waiting on the Lord, the value of a worthy woman, the value of putting God first. If you want to have this kind of faith, you've got to basically, we'll end here in Proverbs 31:30. How do you get there? Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands and let her own works praise her in the gates. Thank God for Abigail's. If this church is to be what it ought to be, if we end up one day having elders, if we one day continue in a path of evangelism, if we one day edify each other and have success within a local church, it's going to be because of good, godly mothers, godly women. As it's said many times, behind every good man is a good woman. And I think spiritually you'll find that to be very common as well. Let us be like Abigail, in control of our spirits, using wisdom, seeking to be a servant. If you're not a Christian this evening, we won't extend the invitation to you. I know we do this at every service. I don't want it to become commonplace. But I want you to know that you can serve God. You can leave this building right with God. We'd love to assist you in being baptized into Christ if you're ready to take that step. It may be that you need to talk with myself or others, and we're glad to talk with you and help you. But don't stay in an uncertain position. Let's always move forward with confidence. God wants us to serve Him with fear and with a great deal of peace as we've studied. There's a way to do that and to know what God's promises are. If we can assist you in any way, invitation is extended as we come as we stand and sing.